Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Boo! Hello, welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh. That's Chuck. We're all together now.
Yeah, the Stuff You Should Know nation as one together.
This is a special time.
It is. I like it.
Chuck, you ever been scared, like really, truly, like about to lose your life scared?
No, thankfully. But you know who has?
Yes, I do.
On multiple occasions, our producer, Jerry, has been scared to the point, like, she was in an elevator once that started to fall.
No. I think you should describe that a little better. This is the in Atlanta. That is an outdoor elevator made of glass.
Right.
You see everything in what, you're 500, 700 stories up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and go ahead, Chuck.
Well, and the elevator was dropping and it caught, so she thought she was going to die then. She's been held up at gunpoint, which was scared her to death. And she was in a storm in a boat one time where she feared for her life. So, Jerry
she's
had a rough
quite
go
a
of
life.
It. And she has to deal with us every week, so.
But at least she's been to the Bahamas before.
Yeah, true.
Assuming she made it.
So I haven't, but Jerry is, she teeters on the edge of death constantly.
Yeah. So, you know, I can tell you that while Jerry was, she's cool as a cucumber, by the way, to everybody who hasn't met her.
Right.
But I can tell you she was still, there were some things going on with her physiologically, whether she liked it or not, right?
Right.
Specifically, she was under the iron fist of one of our favorite things in human physiology.
Fight or flight. It's our favorite thing.
Chuck, give a brief overview of fight or flight. I know we've talked about it before, but sometimes we have latecomers, you know?
Well, it's, you know, it's a physical reaction your body goes through. Your adrenaline surges, pupils dilate, breathing fast, chemicals.
That was a haiku. That was a haiku right there.
It was.
Holy
almost.
Cow, you're good.
Adrenaline, like I said, pumping through your veins, and all of a sudden it's literally a physical chemical reaction in your body. What happens, though, is the threat leaves and things calm down, usually, ideally.
Well, one of the ways that all these reactions start happening is through adrenaline.
Mm-hmm.
It acts on things like your myocardial tissue, your heart tissue, and basically says, work faster, work harder.
Right.
It makes your veins constrict to maximize blood flow.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, adrenaline's flowing throughout your body, and it's just got you really jacked up, really keyed up. So you're either going to run or fight, right?
Mm-hmm.
As you said. The thing is there is a conception among most lay people that you could conceivably, if this happened to you, in a sudden enough fashion, you could conceivably be scared to death.
Right, scared to death. Not scared half to death. And as, just as a sidebar, let me say, that makes no sense whatsoever, scared half to death. And I researched to find the background on that, and I couldn't find any, but you can't be half dead, clearly. It's you're alive or you're dead.
You're dedicated to your craft and apparently see everything in black and white. So
I do.
Kudos to you. Yeah, so, okay, well, basically what we're talking about is called sudden death.
Right, can you be scared to death?
Right, sudden death is basically, it doesn't necessarily have to do with just fear only. It could be panic or actually relief, too. You can conceivably experience such a sense of relief that you could have organ failure.
Right.
Usually sudden death, the definition of it is where basically somebody who is otherwise healthy just drops dead. Most of the time it has to do with heart.
Yeah.
Cardiac arrest or some sort of infarction, right?
Right.
And this is not supposed to happen, is the weird thing. I mean, while to you or I, it makes sense, you know, like you get scared, you die.
Right.
Medical science doesn't generally take too much for granted.
Mm-hmm.
It likes to say, well, yeah, okay, this is related to this, but what are the points in between, right?
Right.
And there's actually an emerging field. It's called neurocardiology. Have you heard about this?
I have not.
There is a guy, and his name is Dr. Martin Samuels.
Yes.
And he is often called the death doctor.
Yeah.
And he is this leading proponent of neurocardiology. He's kind of the father of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I, from what I gather, he doesn't do too much research because the problem is this is a this could very easily become an unethical field.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to perform a study and say, all right, we're going to scare you really badly.
Yeah.
And if you're still alive afterward, we're going to make some notes on that.
Right.
And if not, then thank you for your time, and here's your $25.
And even more to Dr. Samuel's credit, he refuses to test on animals for ethical reasons.
Right.
So basically, he's just having to collect anecdotal evidence. Whenever he can get his hand on a heart from somebody who's experienced sudden death, he likes to do that, I'm quite sure.
Who doesn't?
And one of the things that he's found, and this is actually a well-known symptom of stress, and that is contraction bands along the heart.
School me.
They look like little red stripes.
Okay.
And basically what it is the adrenaline has come in such a concentrated form or in such an amount because of this huge fear response or whatever, that it's just destroyed cells. It's just blown them out.
Wow.
And so you've got lesions formed along your heart tissue.
Mm-hmm.
Not good to have.
No.
And actually, unsurprisingly, this has shown up in cocaine users as well.
Right.
So you can have, create contraction bands along your heart from drug abuse or from being scared.
Right.
Thing is like when you come out of it, you're not like, oh, my heart hurts, you know?
Right.
Like you can't tell. And apparently if this happens enough over time, the heart becomes weak and stops functioning properly.
Interesting.
It is interesting,
isn't it?
That's
good stuff.
And there's actually, again, we should say, neurocardiology is something of an emerging field.
Right.
So they're still trying to get as much proof as they can.
Right.
I found another unrelated study that found that the prevalence of contraction bands in accident victims, the degree and the severity of contraction bands actually increases the longer the time between the accident and between death goes by.
Okay.
So your heart's just pumping.
Right, right.
And your adrenaline's flowing, but then you die.
Sure.
So if you just die immediately, your body doesn't have the time to release that adrenaline, create contraction bands. So there's a clear link between adrenaline and contraction bands. And we do know that something like fear can release adrenaline, right?
Yeah. You know, like you were saying earlier with this doctor, you can't ethically perform a test like this.
No.
But what you can do is you can look at statistics and things like that over time. And a couple of people have done this. The one I like, they call it the Baskerville effect from the famous Hound of Baskerville, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Yes, who was a physician himself.
What a mouthful. He was. And in the Hound of Baskervilles, one of the main characters has a heart attack because they were scared by a ghostly dog that haunted the area.
So I've read that many, many years ago. I've always been, ghostly dog? It's not that scary.
Eh.
Ghost person? Scary.
Eh.
Yeah.
Dog scary. Ghost dog, not scary.
Agreed.
So the one I liked was China and Japan, actually. The number 4 is supposed to be unlucky.
Yeah, we've talked about that before.
We have indeed.
In our terrible, terrible Friday the 13th podcast.
You're being harsh. And apparently in China and Japan, the number 4 is unlucky because its pronunciation is similar to the word for death, first of all.
Right.
And so what they did was they studied some data over the course of...
Pretty expansive data.
Yeah, 25 years. And they looked at the death certificates of about 200,000 Chinese and Japanese people over that period. And then they had a control group of 47 million white folks.
Yeah.
Like you and I.
Sure.
And what they found was the mortality was indeed higher for the 4th of the month compared to the white control group in China and Japan.
Yeah, people with chronic heart disease, they saw a 13% increase in deaths on the 4th of any given month.
Yep.
And for people who were in the hospital with heart problems, there was a 47% increase compared to the white control group on the 4th of the month.
You can't dismiss that.
It is interesting. So you obviously, as we covered in that terrible Friday the 13th podcast, we said that, you know, there's not a lot to it, but that doesn't mean there's no fear associated with it, right?
Right, right.
So it's entirely possible that, you know, these people are already suffering from heart problems.
Right.
But, you know, the 4th of the month rolls around, they're a little more jacked up.
They're so looking at that calendar, you know.
They're just a little more vulnerable than other days of the month. So
right.
It would be kind of self-initiated. And Chuck, I know you're hot and heavy for another study about sudden death, aren't you?
Yeah, there's a good one. Remember the earthquake in 1994 in Northridge in Southern California?
Oh, yeah. How could I forget? Yeah. 6.7 on the Richter scale.
Was it?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
Mm-hmm.
Good for you. On a normal day in L.A., there's about 5 sudden deaths, which we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
When the Northridge earthquake hit, there were 24 sudden deaths that day. Big spike.
That is a huge spike.
Almost 5 times. And a few of these, they link to physical exertion, so you can throw those out. But most of these were actually attributed to the you know, tremendous fright caused by the earthquake.
Right.
And the average age was a little bit high, 68 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But only 42% of these people had any kind of heart disease previously in the past. So that was genuine sudden death, even though they were a little bit on the old side.
Right, yeah.
So that's, you know,
again,
substantial.
Again, a pretty clear link, right? But, of course, correlation is not causation.
True.
And so neurocardiologists like Dr. Martin are going to keep looking into it. And actually, one other thing. All of this is based on something called voodoo death. Have you heard about that?
I have. Walter Cannon?
Yeah. In 1942, he wrote a paper. And basically, he said that there was a lot more prevalence of sudden death in places where voodoo was practiced.
Right.
And he went on to postulate that this was because people believed in voodoo and that kind of mysticism so much that when they were led to believe that they had just been hexed or should be dead under voodoo practices,
sure.
They actually did die.
Right.
In some cases, they died because they wouldn't drink food or water because they thought it was poisoned by voodoo.
Right, right.
So they died of that, but some of them also died of sudden death as well. And that's actually the basis of all of this. The Hound of the Baskervilles, sure, but really, as far as medical science goes, it was Cannon who first really started looking at sudden death, and it continues today, and it still will continue, because we like to know why we die, so
right.
We can try to stop it.
And Cannon was a Harvard physiologist, so he wasn't some fly-by-night crackpot.
No, he was definitely one worth listening to.
There was another thing I wanted to talk about, too, while I have you here.
Yes, sure.
Which is, have you ever heard of someone... supposedly their hair turning white overnight because of fear?
Sure, I have heard that.
Not quite true.
No.
That's a bit of an urban myth from what I could tell.
Just send it to us, Chuck.
We both did some research here, and apparently fear and stress and that kind of emotion can cause your hair to turn white, but there's no way it could happen overnight.
It would cause a change in metabolic function, I think, that could turn your hair a different color.
True.
Or make it lose its color, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But there is a way it can turn gray seemingly overnight, but it's not from fear. What that's called is diffuse alopecia areata.
It's like selective hair loss, right?
Yeah, basically. That's sudden hair loss, which can happen overnight. But the biochemistry of alopecia isn't that well understood. So if you have a mix of dark and gray hair or white hair, the uncolored hair is less likely to fall out. So, theoretically, you could wake up with a lot less hair, and the only hair that sticks around is white. So
it's a bad morning.
Yeah, but that's not quite the same thing as being scared white.
Right. Also, even if it could change your hair color, which we're not entirely certain it could, it would only do it from the scalp down. Everything that is out of your head, like your fingernails, if you have fingernails growing out of your head, you have much bigger problems than your hair being white. But anything that's coming off of your body, fingernails, your hair, those are dead cells.
Right.
It's dead. So there's no change that could take place aside from maybe a Flowbee going over them.
Right. What do you mean scalp down, though?
The scalp toward your skull.
Okay. Gotcha.
Under the skin.
Gotcha.
Subdermal.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Head of a cat. this entire podcast is based on one of my favorite articles on the site right now. It's called "Can You Really Scare Someone to Death?" It was written by our esteemed colleague Molly Edmonds.
Molls.
Who not only has this article to be proud of, she and another colleague of ours who we love very much, Kristen Conger, just launched their own podcast.
They
did. Called "Stuff Mom Never Told You."
Mm-hmm.
You can find that on iTunes alongside ours and a bunch of other How Stuff Works podcasts. At our homepage on iTunes, you can just type in "How Stuff Works" as one word into the iTunes search bar.
We have a little room.
And you can also type all sorts of cool things into the search bar at howstuffworks.com, including "Can you really scare someone to death?"
But now, Josh, it's still not over.
There's
more goodness in the form of...
You people aren't going anywhere. It's listener mail time.
Listener mail. So listener mail. I've got quite a few today. These are things that we've titled "Stuff We Should Know." not necessarily corrections, although some are. We did the podcast on comas, which we got a lot of good response from.
Yeah, we were kind of worried about that, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, we didn't want to treat it lightly, and we actually had people who had family members in comas, and they thought we were respectful
which
to it.
Which went a really long way to... That was huge, actually.
But in that podcast, we mentioned the film Diving Bell and Butterfly, and I had seen the movie, and I said something about the main character was able to... I think I said he
Jean
used
Michel
a...
Bobby.
Yeah, that he used a computer... and looked at the keys of the computer to write his memoir.
Yes.
Not true at all.
No?
what he did was he blinked the letters to someone who transcribed this book for him.
Yes.
And it was a really, basically the main part of the film.
Yeah.
And I can't explain why I didn't remember that. So
it's okay, brain freeze. You've been all eating apologies. Ice cream for a while.
So we need to thank Kendra Walpe of Philadelphia and Tita of Montreal, Canada.
I especially would like to thank whoever sent the... computer device in quotes, which apparently we called it,
right.
And then sent us the Wikipedia link, which, you know,
right.
Great, thank you.
And Jesse Aiden of Vienna, Austria sent that in.
Sweet.
So another quickie, hypoallergenic cats.
Yes.
Josh, you goofed up and said that it created a new species. Not
yes.
true, not true. It's no. not a new species. It was a new breed.
Mm-hmm.
And we got quite a few people. Philip Fass, Scott Rudick, Matt Weaboo of Boston, J. Scott Brunig, who is from Princeton University, Jamie Van Der Rot of Saskatchewan, Canada, and actually put this in the form of a haiku, which is, ain't speciation, because they can interbreed, still I learned a lot.
Beautiful.
And we love our haikus.
Nice.
And I'm sorry, a quick one just came in before you recorded, Kishore Velodi.
Okay. Thanks to all of you.
Two more quickies.
Oh, yeah?
I'm sorry, one more quickie.
Okay.
Yeast is a fungus from our Moonshine podcast. I think you said something about yeast being
a plant.
And all of our biology friends said, no, it's a fungus. And Wes Sivak, Brian Ray, Sam S., and John Sauter told us all that it was, in fact, a fungus.
Fantastic.
Among us.
Thank you to all of you. We'll try to, you know, not screw up quite as much, but if not, what would you have to write to us about? So
true.
Keep them coming, right?
Yes. Keep us diligent.
And if you want to learn a little more about Friday the 13th, right?
Mm-hmm.
Other superstitions, urban legends, we've got a great article on that.
Right. There's a lot more in the Friday the 13th article, though.
Yes. Yeah, there is. You just go on to our handy search bar, start randomly typing letters, or you could make a more specific search and type in Friday the 13th or urban legend, something
sure.
like that. And you can do that at howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.